And now we're joined in the studio by Mark Dorison, the chair of the Orange County Board of Commissioners. How are you?
Oh, I couldn't be any better. How are you, Aaron?
Good. How did you celebrate the 4th of July?
I went to the Cairo reading of the Frederick Douglass essay, mm-hmm. You know, what does the 4th of July mean to a slave? I saw you there. You gave a stirring rendition of a few paragraphs. It's always a great event. It's very powerful. And a former public defender, James Williams, got that ball rolling, and Mayor Lydia Lavelle ran with it. And I heard yesterday, I think, that we're, Carborough, I say where because I live there, is the only municipality in the state that does that, which I hope maybe more will take that up. It's a really powerful essay, and it's still so timely, you know, about sort of the nature of American rhetoric and American reality.
Yep, absolutely. And just a reminder, and I think with the 4th of July being what it is, like a celebration of American patriotism, it's also a really important reminder that that the 4th of July is a celebration of values that A, we're not even close even to this day to fulfilling, and B, we'll never fulfill. Like, there's not an end point for freedom. We have to constantly be striving to get there.
That's right. It's a constant goal, and there's always forces pushing back against it. Mm-hmm. So the struggle continues.
Yep, absolutely. So that was good. What else did you do? Was that with the that was my favorite part of the whole day, I think.
But that was my favorite part of the day as well. It was a really great day, and there was a lot of great folks out. I went to the movies, so got out of the heat for a while. Saw Baby Driver, which
I just saw that.
Wasn't it great?
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yes.
I think we came out of it and said, that was stupid fun, right? Yes, stupid fun is exactly right.
Yeah. I had low expectations.
There were so many plot holes,
and
it was so much fun, and it didn't matter how bad the script was.
Because
the action scenes are so great.
It was really fun.
Yeah. So that's America in a nutshell, right?
Yeah,
a Douglas
cars
speech in a stupid
and
action
crime,
movie.
Yeah. Crime heist movie and car crashes. And, you know, that's the 4th of July.
All right. So speaking again with Mark Dorison, Board of County Commissioners, not a lot going on for county government right now because you're done for the next couple of months, right, for meetings, like a month and a half?
That's right. The commissioners don't meet again, you know, collectively until early September. But, of course, we all have committees and advisory board assignments that meet all the time. So there's the work of the county continues.
And the county commissioners are not going to meet to pass a brunch ordinance because there's no reason to, right? It's all
That's
municipalities.
Right. The way the statute was written, as you know, it's an opt-in statute. Mm-hmm. But the county's control, if the county were to adopt an ordinance, it would only apply to the unincorporated areas of the county. So it's really the municipalities where the restaurants are primarily. And so I was glad to see Carborough, jumped out right away, first municipality in the state to pass that. And I see that Chapel Hill is going to be considering it soon. So I think it's a good economic development tool. It's good for for restaurants and businesses. And it's always an interesting reminder of the kind of schizophrenic relationship this state has with alcohol.
Yeah.
It's a historically very socially conservative state. There have been all these restrictions. But it's also, over time has been recognized as a tool of economic growth and development. Mm-hmm. And so to see that still being played out today is interesting.
Yeah, it's certainly more and more now that you've got the craft beer industry, you've got the craft distillery industry, and sort of craft like speakeasy kind of bars. Like, all of those are big economic drivers in a way that they weren't even like 5 or 10 years ago.
That's right, and there have been, this brunch bill got a lot of the attention about serving drinks earlier on Sunday, but there were a number of issues in the legislature this year related to, again, that kind of schizophrenic relationship the state has with alcohol. There was a bill, very high-profile bill, around craft breweries and when they would have to contract with a third-party distributor. There were in the brunch bill, there was issues about how distilleries can, how many bottles they can sell, and things like that. So, and it wasn't too long ago, and every few years there's a discussion sort of at the state level as to whether or not the ABC commission ought to be privatized like it is in most states.
Yeah, I was going to say, I grew up in Michigan and then I went to New Jersey for grad school. So coming down here was kind of my first experience with such restrictive liquor laws like they have in North Carolina. I guess I'd seen it in like Utah and a couple of other states that I'd been in briefly, but this is a new thing for people who are coming in from out of state.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and it's a state-run monopoly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and we talk about the economic driverness of it. It's really affecting the distilleries, the bars, the restaurants. And I still haven't gone on Open Table to see if Acme and Provence are all full up yet, which I assume they probably are from 10 to noon. But it's not just the restaurants. Like, you go downtown to downtown Carrboro and you eat in an Acme or Provence where otherwise you might not have. And then you've got the whole day to go to Cameron's or go to Weaver Street or do something that you otherwise might not do.
Exactly. I mean, restaurants are big drivers of economic activity, and so people come to eat or to have a drink, and then they walk around, they stay, or they come to do something else with the plan that they will also have a meal while they're downtown. So.
Yeah. Speaking with Mark Dorison again, orangecountync.gov, to get more information on town and county governments, and also managing attorney for the UNC Center for Civil Rights. So I know we'll talk next week, Wednesday, about the big meeting in Asheville on Thursday the 13th, but this is one that we want to get the word out about, kind of remind people, because we've been talking about it for a couple of months, but the Board of Governors is meeting Thursday and Friday of next week, and the big meeting is going to be on Thursday of next week in Asheville, where the committee is going to be voting on the proposal to effectively shut down the center.
Well, that's what we had heard. You know,
You let me get that whole question.
Yeah. Well, that's you tee it up and
yeah,
then I,
all
you
right,
know, and
there
then
you
I
go.
Take a swing at it. Well, I mean, just today, there we're getting varying changes of information about what's actually happening with the Board of Governors. Certainly, until. Late last week, we were all operating under the assumption that the Education Policy Committee, which this advocacy band is in front of, would meet on Thursday and vote on that, and then either it would go to the full board on that Friday or the next meeting that they have, but that the key vote would be in this committee. We have more recently learned that, because this is the first meeting with new members on the Board of Governors, that the Thursday session is considered more of a retreat, and that they would not be taking up any substantive issues. Now, that doesn't mean the full board can consider it on Friday. I mean, you know, when the board makes its own rules, they can waive those rules as they see fit.
Right.
And you know, I'm certainly concerned about them meeting and not having folks there to sort of be eyes and ears on what's happening. But what we've just heard today is that the current word is that they will not vote on the proposal on the 13th, but that the Education Policy Committee will have a special called meeting in Chapel Hill in the first week of August. So that is third or fourth hand information. So I take it with, you know, a mound of salt.
Yeah.
But that's what we're hearing right now. And so we're hoping folks will come out to the meeting and be present and show their support for the center. But the latest we've heard is that there may not be a vote next week.
So how does it have to work? The committee has to pass it, and then the full board has to confirm it. And the full board confirming it is kind of a rubber stamp usually on whatever the committee does. So
that's
the committee
right.
vote is the important
one. I think the committee vote is the key vote. I think the full board will generally, you know, affirm whatever the committee suggests. And that is how it's supposed to work. But, you know, we know that they can waive their rules at any time. They could decide to take up a matter if, you know, by motion and by vote of the board. And so we know that the proponents of the proposal to shut down the center are champing at the bit to move that forward. And so, I just feel like those of us who are fighting that, supporting the center, just need to be prepared at any time. So,
how can people continue to get their word out about their position on this?
Well, people should continue to email the Board of Governors. They should email the Chancellor, Carol Folt. They should email UNC System President Margaret Spellings. They should and tell all of them that they oppose this ban on advocacy, and also that they, you know, I think it's worth pointing out that this sort of repeatedly changing the process and the timeline and the schedule is troubling. It's troubling regardless of how you feel about the Center for Civil Rights. It's troubling to the idea of having a transparent process for university governance that people can participate in.
Yeah, because they knew there were going to be new members on the board a long time ago, I have to assume. Yeah.
That's right. I mean, this was first floated in late October. We thought it was going to be on their calendar in December. Then it didn't appear on the agenda. It was on their agenda in March. They had a discussion about it. They decided to get more information. They had a special public hearing in May. We were under the impression it was going to be voted on at their meeting in May.
Right.
In May, they said, no, it's going to be in July. Now we're hearing that it may not be in July. There may be a special meeting in August. So, it's very, very important reminder of why we as residents of this state need to demand that our government is open, transparent, mm-hmm. And accessible. You know, it's why agendas for meetings are supposed to be posted in sufficiently in advance. People are supposed to know what's going to be discussed, that they're supposed to have an opportunity to make public comment. You know, it's interesting. The Board of Governors allows public comment after their meeting is over. They have the whole meeting, they adjourn, then they assign three members of the committee to go and listen to the public comment. So, yep.
A recent development.
That's right. They didn't used to have public comment at all. So,
yeah.
It's really, you know, it really contributes also when the government is not transparent, it really contributes to people's distrust, to people's alienation from the system. And that's, you know, that's bad for everyone.
Yeah. And again, speaking with Mark Dorison, it's not like the center is just operating as normal until the vote takes place. There's a moratorium on advocacy, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
When this first came up, the dean of the law school agreed to an interim moratorium while the board, you know, in March, while the board got the answers to the questions it had, with the understanding that the vote would be done in July. And so we've been operating for the last few months shackled, as if the proposal had already passed.
Right, I was going to say, so what is the center doing now on a day-to-day basis?
Well, we do have some cases that are already in litigation that mm-hmm. we are still working on and are.
Yeah, moratorium on new cases.
That's right.
That was what it was.
And
yeah.
we have a tremendous amount of matters that we're working on in various kind of stages of advocacy that are not in litigation. So we're continuing to do that. We're doing an interesting project about school board meeting minutes and how available they are to folks. We should have a report coming out on that in a couple of months. And we're doing a lot of advocacy work around environmental justice issues related to hog farms in eastern North Carolina, as well as continuing to work with community groups around the state on issues related to school equity and adequacy and diversity.
Well, again, if you're listening out there and you want to get the word out to members of the Board of Governors about this proposal, you might have to remind me of the email address, public@bog.northcarolina.edu. Is that it? I think it is.
I can never remember. Yeah, you always stump me.
It was a while ago I had
yes.
it. Okay, I think it's Board of Governors. All right, we're both frantically Googling this.
Yes.
This is live radio in the making, everyone.
I know. I mean, this is the thing. Einstein once said you should never waste any of your brain capacity memorizing anything you could look up.
That's true.
So
he was not around for the age of the internet. You can look literally anything up. Yes, it's public@bog.northcarolina.edu. So
I know that the chancellor's email address is chancellor@unc.edu.
Yes.
And Margaret Spelling's email address is president@unc.edu.
At northcarolina.edu, because she's the system president.
I think it's at unc.edu.
I think it's North Carolina.
All right, well,
send it to both just in case.
Right.
All right, Mark Dorison, thank you so much.
You're welcome. It's always great to see you, Aaron.